There's an old saying in fitness that says, no pain, no gain. And I think about this saying because I actually think it's a little bit funny at the concept that you have to be uncomfortable and you have to feel pain in order to get somewhere in your fitness journey. Now, for many of us who are newer to the fitness space and into your fitness journey, there will be a certain level of discomfort and there will be a certain level of breaking out of your comfort zone, both from a physical and a mental perspective that you're going to have to go through. But you shouldn't be in pain. You shouldn't be sitting in your apartment the day after training, writhing and wondering if you should actually go back the next day. If you have dealt with an injury, you also shouldn't have to deal and put up with pain on a regular basis. Sometimes we take the discomforts of life at face value and we kind of just accept them for what they are. But that's also not how you should be living. You should be taking that discomfort and doing something about it. You're feeling that discomfort because there's something off about your practice and there's something off about your routine, no matter what that is and no matter what your occupation might be. Today, I'm talking to my new friend, Jordan Sita. Jordan is a physical therapist and the founder of the Abstract Physio. And my conversation with Jordan today focuses a lot around pain and pain management. You see, Jordan's perspective on pain has a lot to do with how you can work with it and how you can use your pain as a signal for how to get better, faster, and stronger. And we talked today a lot about pain management, recovery management, how to set goals, how to use resistance training in order to optimize your performance, no matter what your physical goals might be, and how you can use recovery techniques and recovery methods in order to become a better athlete, no matter if you are an everyday athlete like myself or you are a competitive athlete. I'm your host, Rich Sabata, and this is the Bodega Body Podcast.
Yo, smoking on top shelf Guido, and it's all over my hands like Cheetos. All she wanna do is dance in tight speedos, relax in a mansion like the Migos. I can't even sell the shit that I smoke. This shit cause bands like the Beatles. And we watch movies like it's Regal, then go cash out on seafood, send her home with a quarter ounce of diesel. Girl, that boy don't even feed you. Yet he's out, he's spreading like the measles. I feel like these niggas want competition with
me. All right. Welcome back to the show. Special thanks to my boy David James for providing the music to the podcast. As always, you can find David on Spotify as well as Apple Music and SoundCloud. That's David James with a dollar sign for the S. I sometimes think about this fitness thing in a lot of different ways. Especially because there are a lot of things that we tend to neglect and not pay enough attention to when we're thinking about our fitness journeys. And I think recovery and all of the things that are surrounded within us is a part of that. So I wanted today to focus a little bit on some of that. So with me, I've got a physical therapist, a powerlifting coach, and the founder of the Abstract Physio. Please welcome Jordan Sita. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, Rich. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I just got done with a workout. I just showered. And so I'm in that weird, like, half sweaty, half wet from the shower sort of mode. But I'm good otherwise.
For me, that's like a very euphoric feel. Like,
No. It's a great feeling, but there's a strange feeling to it when you have to sit down, you know, to record a podcast and to do it as well. But you were going to say,
yeah, I certainly think you're in the minority of people who exercise, shower, and then hop on to host a podcast. Yeah. But knowing that you already accomplished your fitness goals for the day and probably feel like you did as well is an incredible feeling.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man, absolutely. Now, you know, I want to get into the abstract physio. I want to get into your background and everything. But first things first is, you know, understatement of the century is that the last number of months have been crazy. So how have you been over the past number of months, man?
Yeah, it's been challenging. I think for many of us, especially here, I can speak from being in New York City, having a place that never sleeps to a place that is constantly sleeping by 11 o'clock now. So just from a social life perspective, it's taking a hit. But as far as my business goes, I've been fortunate to have something to throw my energy into. So a lot of things like going to the gym and socializing had been taken away, especially towards the beginning. But I always had my business to throw my energy to. So I'm just trying to discover new ways to enrich myself and throw everything that I can to the clients that I care so deeply about.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure like a lot of other businesses, you know, going from a very high touch business to something that is pretty much 100% virtual, right? Like that is a giant shift to you, but to clients as well. So how has that transition been so far?
It's difficult because I think there's a lot of education that needs to take place where clients are used to being one-on-one in person with me to now being behind a screen and having high expectations for the same level of quality, which I'm actually fortunate. I believe that I'm able to do a good job coaching clients from afar with my words. And communication has always been one of the pillars of my practice, that in order for individuals to make long-term improvements to their overall quality of life, they need to be coached through it and they need to learn tools that they can apply forever. It's not just you come see me, I make you feel better, you go away, and then you go fall into the same habits. It's I teach you things and then you can teach other people and then you apply them yourselves.
Right. Absolutely, man. And I think that what you just said is absolutely key, right, to a lot of these things. And I think that that is the difference between a really good coach and a subpar coach. Like there are plenty of people, be it trainers, be it whoever else that are in this industry that like want to keep people in the cycle. But I think it's you know, probably better to continuously educate your clients and continuously give them the tools in order for them to get better for themselves. Because, you might have a long-term relationship with a client, but for many, you only see them for a specific limited time. So giving them that long-term knowledge is also super important.
Absolutely. And I think what's great about what my offerings is that they might have short-term goals of pain relief, but they might have long-term goals of being just overall more healthy. Maybe they want to compete in something. So I have some clients that stick with me to be coached instead of more as like a rehab client. So like I laugh when I'm about to say this because this was in my video, but literally I could take you from the bottom to the top and everywhere in between. There's no boundaries to how far we can go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Well, I want to get into a little bit about your philosophy and into your training and to your methodology. So you call yourself the Abstract Physio, which is a cool name. Love the branding. I love the red. Red's my favorite color. So every time I see you pop up on my Instagram, I'm like, oh, man, that's like a really good color of red. And you put a lot of great stuff out there. But what does it mean, right, to be abstract and a physio?
Yeah, so cool story about that. I actually just posted a couple weeks ago about how I became the Abstract Physio. I started blogging about 2.5 years ago when I went to a course by a physio and chiropractor named Greg Lehman. And what he taught us in the course was a lot, very much it challenged the status quo of how healthcare is being carried out. So I'm like, I think that individuals need better quality services and attention in order to get the results. And we're constantly saying all these things that may be well-intentioned, but are not the most evidence-based information. And therefore people aren't getting what they need, which is high quality evidence and attention. So I started to write on a blog and eventually that came to me realizing that, wow, all these other things are so much more important than just me putting my hands on somebody. Like, it's great to be, it's important to be skilled. It's important to have an idea what you're doing with your hands. But what's most important is getting someone to actually trust you and to believe in not what you're selling, but what you're providing them, which is an immense value of not only pain relief, but just overall quality of life skills.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I think what you said is particularly important because we live in the information age, right? Or the disinformation age sometimes, in that it is really easy to go out there, to Google something, something's hurting. I'm going to be like, all right, like, well, why do I have lower back pain? Why do I have ankle pain? Why do I have knee pain? And you get a ton of different results, right? And so like, in many ways, the people who are studied in this need to sell themselves, like you were just saying, and saying that like, no, this individualized attention is going to be important because that article is a pretty generalized article, and that article isn't necessarily specific to you. So I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah, so to piggyback off of that, a lot of these studies that are being done or have been done are on incredibly healthy, active, you know, individuals who are in their 20s and maybe in a particular sport. So sample size is not only limited, but it's specific to a population that may not exactly translate to the population I'm working with. And I think the most important thing that people don't realize is that life is not linear. Like the factors of life change all the time, whether it be a significant negative life crisis that happens out of nowhere and catches you off your feet, or you just have constant stress from your work environment, gyms being closed, causing stress, not only mentally, but physically, you're losing training. You have to appreciate the ebb and flow of all these things in overall performance and recovery. And I think if you want to call me abstract, because I can appreciate all those things and offer insight, you know, week by week, day by day, possibly minute by minute, depending on my client's needs.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And there's I think a really cool revolution happening right now, and I think some of that starts to come out in a lot of the conversations that I've been having in this like newer generation of health and fitness professionals that are realizing like, no, we need to think about everything holistically, right? Like the stuff that's going up on top is directly involved with the things that are happening with the rest of the body. And it's this really cool like mixture of Eastern and Western philosophies of health and medicine. And it's pretty dope to watch just like all happen little by little, because you know, I think that we're starting to come to some really cool sort of realizations. I want to get a little bit into how you got into physical therapy. I know a lot of a couple of physical therapists, and they got into it because of personal injury. Is that the case with you, or was there something else that triggered?
Yeah, I think on admission, they said about 90% of us would have written that in our admission essay, that personally, and, you know, I don't like being the norm, but that is how I ended up down this path, where I was running track when I was 14, and for some reason, some guy in front of me just stopped, and my ankle didn't stop, so there was like a nice 90 degree angle between my foot and my ankle, and it swelled up pretty bad. I couldn't put weight on it, so I ended up having rehab, and I have to say, my first rehab experience was not a positive one. I was passed around for multiple physical therapists, and I would just get very basic exercises, be left on ice and electric stim for about 10 minutes at the end. And all I wanted to do at that time was play baseball. I was sidelined. I missed the whole preseason for baseball, and I think the first week of the regular season, because I wasn't cleared to practice. And you know, whether or not that was due to my lack of attention and consistency in PT at the time, I don't know. But what I did appreciate is I had an amazing athletic trainer in high school. She was arguably the best trainer in the whole, I'm from New Jersey, like the whole Shore Conference, if you will. She was incredible. And spending time getting taped up by her before practice and talking to her about injury and seeing how dedicated she was to all of us, not only on the field, but just as growing adolescents, you know, going through life, I started to gain an affinity towards injury, and I love sports, so I was like, okay, this might be a great way to delve to things that I'm interested in. And then the path from there was pretty straightforward. I knew I was going to go to college to study physical therapy, go to physical therapy school, and then that was it. and here I am.
How have you felt about the industry as a whole since you've gotten into it?
I can certainly say I did not think I'd be an entrepreneur this early in my career. I started off in the practice setting that I had desired. I thought very much that I was going to pursue all these high-level manual therapy certifications, which would be completely useless in the COVID era because I can't put my hands on anyone anyway. But all I wanted to do is justify my knowledge because I felt like the only way I would prove that I'm skillful is if I knew to the exact joint and receptor how to manipulate someone's body, that is the level, that is the sign that I am an expert at an expert physical therapist, and I justify my knowledge set. But it couldn't be further from how I view overall wellness at this point, where I think manual therapy is a tool that should be used wisely. We tend to overutilize it in physical therapy, but when you boil it down, it's passive treatment. It's a treatment where an individual doesn't really take part in their own recovery, which is something that's like an essential part of working with me. I don't work with people who don't put in work. So offering a service for pain relief, which might be necessary, especially if someone hurts themselves like 10 minutes ago and they might need some hands-on tender love and affection, which is great, but it has to be used wisely and there's a time and place for it. And I just think sometimes it's just easier to basically massage someone or do a joint mobilization when you could be teaching someone qualities of movement and information about pain that would have longer lasting effects. So I don't think manual therapy is useless. I certainly use it sometimes, but I'm nowhere near as reliant on it as I'd say the rest of the field is.
You brought up something really interesting, and it's the idea that you kind of have to do some work as a part of your recovery, and you have to be kind of heavily involved, right? I think that, like, when I think about pain management and I think about recovery, I think one of the things that people sometimes might turn to pretty sort of on the surface level is something like a chiropractor, right? And they'll say, I just want to go get, and literally this is a wording one of my friends have used to me. It's like, I just want to go get split open by a chiropractor. I just want someone to crack my back and like adjust me, and that's it, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't necessarily solve the long-term issues that might have caused whatever pain that you're in. It might not address the specific needs that you have, so you're not in that specific scenario again.
Yeah, and to say, I'm just going to put this out there, there's a lot of chiropractors who have pivoted from the traditional back cracking model of treatment, and they are a little bit more holistic. And some of them might still be going down that path. But to go back to your original point, you use a manipulation technique as a facilitation to teach movement, to make movement more tolerable, to improve quality of life. But it shouldn't be this cycle, and unfortunately, and I saw it, and I don't like, I'll be pretty open about my family, but like my father had seen a chiropractor for many, many years, and it was just kind of like, I feel good, I'm going back next week, and I'm going again and again, and eventually it's like, you've been going to a guy for 5 years. Is it really that effective if you've been seeing him for 5 years? Is this guy a genius businessman? So my dad didn't really learn anything from there except that the chiropractor offers him pain relief, which is true. But it's not the only thing or person in life that offers pain relief.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know what's interesting? I think about pain relief a lot. So my mom, when I was about 10 years old, had gotten into a car accident, and she's fine. She can walk, but she had a pretty bad like lower back injury, and she had to go to physical therapy for years, and she it was all covered by her health insurance, and I think from that point of perspective, it's great. But all they really ever did for her was electrostimulus back there, and I don't think my mom ever really learned sort of the techniques that are needed for being comfortable, especially as you start getting up there in age, to manage that and to. Even though you probably can't have surgery back there because you might not be able to afford the surgery or the surgery might be too risky, to learn to manage that. And so I wanted to make sure today that we got a little bit into pain and pain management, because one of the things I see you talking about a lot on Instagram, on your website, is pain in particular. So I guess from your perspective and your practice, how do you think that people can learn to work with or around pain?
Yeah, I think that's one of the largest paradigm shifts for people, because oftentimes they see physicians that tell them to stay away from certain activities that might cause pain. But there's a difference between like theoretical things that cause pain and things that actually cause pain. So I think I want, if you guys don't remember anything else from this whole podcast, remember this. Pain is just an alarm system, an alarm signal rather, and it's the brain's perception of danger, not actual danger. There are many people who have herniated discs and have no pain, and vice versa. So pain itself is not indicative of actual harm. It's how the brain is perceiving harm. So what I like to encourage people to do is like, okay, you have pain. Well, let pain be your guide. Use pain as a feedback tool. So for example, if someone's doing a squat and they can go maybe halfway until they feel, and it's difficult to say because pain is such a subjective experience, so it's all on the individual to communicate the level of pain that they feel. So I tell people, okay, from 0 to 10, how much does this hurt? If they say 2 to 3, I'm like, okay, let's go, keep going. We could probably either play around with the range of motion. You could add a little bit more weight. You're going to be safe.
Yeah.
Versus like if they're like, oh, it's like a 6 or 7, then I start to worry a little bit that the exercise is too harmful. And then that is my indicator to scale back, try a different exercise, maybe decrease the weight. But playing around with these variables is the way that you train your brain that you're not actually in danger. And eventually I hate to break, this is the secret of rehab, is like you change the body's perception of danger. In a nutshell, that is what we're doing. And you have to provide a stimulus in order to do that. And I think pain is a great stimulus, even though it hurts sometimes.
You know, that's particularly interesting, because I think about, you know, like myself in my own training, and as we've talked about a little bit in the past, just, you know, through messages and whatnot, I sometimes have trouble, and there's probably other people out there that are like this too, that have trouble distinguishing what is normal tension, right? And what is normal discomfort? And what's like problematic tension and discomfort? And that, I think, is really the thing that is hard to learn for some of us. It's what are the things that we should watch out for in that sort of realm?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to what do people perceive as being harmful to them. So pain, for example, could just be, you know, a mosquito bite. A mosquito bite could be painful to somebody, where for me, it's like, okay, that's just a mosquito bite. It itches, but it's not really bothering me. So all of us have different pain sensitivities and thresholds. And that's one factor to consider. But I think that, you know, for pain, it's just such a complex topic. But if your quality of movement is impeded because of tightness or discomfort, call it whatever you want, I would start to ask questions about, okay, is this something that's transient where you wake up the next day and then you're fine? Or it's like, I used to be able to sit for an hour and now I can barely sit for 5 minutes. That is something that's worth looking a little bit more deeply into. But general tightness, I think, and soreness would be the product of overall movement, but recovery is modulated by many factors. So to say that something is necessarily harmful, what I would say is if the intensity like spikes and stays, it either gets worse or it's impeding your quality of movement, then it would be concerning.
Okay. All right. You know, it's one of the things I think about, especially when it comes to pain, especially people who deal with pain for a while, is there a point where pain is just something that you kind of have to live with for certain people, right? Like, be it from an injury, from your line of work, like, is it something that you kind of just have to tolerate? Or, and again, obviously depends on the individual, the person, the situation. But is that something that, that you should just tolerate?
I don't think so. I think that pain can be modified often, and it may require certain levels of attention at different stages of your life. So for example, if we take my sprained ankle from when I was 14, for some random reason, I'd say about twice a year, I feel increased sensitivity in my left ankle, but my performance is better than it ever has been. So it's not something that holds me back. And if I feel a little bit of discomfort, it just warrants like, okay, it needs a little bit of attention now for some reason, but it's not something I would say that I live with. I think if you look at pain as pain is an experience, right? So there's no definite, like, if I'm out of pain now, it's going to be gone forever. You don't know that for sure, but you can't also say that you're definitely going to be in pain again because now you have some sort of tissue damage. That's not always the case. And certainly in powerlifters, I know plenty, even myself, who have had a herniated disc, and our numbers continue to go up and we're not in any pain. Does that mean I won't be in pain for some reason in 5 years? Maybe. But we also can't say that it's the activity itself that's going to cause me to be in pain in 5 years. So the crappy answer that nobody likes is that it depends, but in this case, it's certainly the case.
It truly does. Yeah, absolutely, man. You brought up powerlifting, which, as I've mentioned to you before, I have a particular interest in, just because as a kid who was never athletic or quote unquote like traditionally strong, I was always just like the bulky kid who like can push some things, but like whatever. I have quite the affinity for powerlifting and getting stronger. From your perspective, what is the importance about resistance training, and why should people give a damn for resistance training, right? I know plenty of people out there who just do a ton of cardio and just love their cardio and maybe might not have that desire or the drive for lifting in general, be it for muscle, like don't want to, you know, grow giant muscles for or whatever. But why should people give a damn about resistance training?
Yeah, I think no matter what your body composition or performance goals are, we need to continuously give our bodies a chance to endure the demands of our sport. Whether it be you have to push or pull a certain amount of heavy weight over a short period of time, or you're running a marathon, or you're a dancer, it doesn't matter. The body functions in three different planes. And rougher runners in particular who are just doing cardio, they're usually only moving in one plane. So if you neglect those other planes of movement, you could increase your likelihood for injury if your training continues to go up, but you're not also increasing your capacity and your endurance to meet those demands in all three planes. And just from a strictly neurophysiological perspective, when we do resistance training, we give our muscles information. We're providing micro-irritation, but it allows for motor units to form. So you have an overall increase in muscle fibers, density of muscle fibers, and motor units. So motor units are basically what gives us that ability to get a quick burst of energy if we need it. So if you're thinking about a runner, you can train yourself to be more powerful as a runner and prevent injury if you do strength training versus like powerlifting. Obviously you're going to lift heavy weight, and it's about playing around with the variables of how you lift the weight and at which speeds that gets you to perform even better. So there's not a sport that I know of that can't, even bowlers could benefit from resistance training, not just because they're holding the ball, but it's a demanding sport, especially because it's usually unilateral. You're only rolling with one arm. So you lose a lot of focus on the other side, and you want to try to maintain this homeostasis side to side comparison, because we usually all have one weak side. Mine, certainly my left side, because I was a right hand dominant athlete growing up. So you got to focus on those imbalances.
I will tell you that as I've gotten more into fitness and more into trying to pay attention with my body, I've also started to realize that, like, oh, my left side is not as strong as my right side, and that, like, there are definitely things I need to start doing in order to, like, address that, especially, like, down in my legs. It's probably where I notice it the most, less so in the arms. It's like I notice that, like, my left, like the strength coming from my left hip and my left leg is just like, it's not there. It's not where the other one is. Where does stuff like that come from?
Well, again, a lot of it is developed in youth, where we adopt certain movement patterns. And if they're not consistently reinforced, we might favor one side over another. For example, the way that infants sit could change their development, where I know that my left hip has more limited hip internal rotation just because I was used to favoring my left hip in external rotation. And all of the sports that I did were promoting hip internal rotation and just like pinching the hip. And I wasn't doing it to the other side because I'm a right-handed thrower. So I spent all this time focusing on one direction of movement, even though my whole body was involved. But you grow up and your skeletons mature in those regards with those connections. So I think it's important growing up to practice doing movements on both sides. And even now I try to sometimes grab my toothbrush with my opposite hand. And if I'm not in a rush, I mean, I'm hoping that it doesn't result in cavities because I'm using my opposite hand. But again, just try to give your body all the stimulus. Like if you're right-handed, you're reaching for doors with your right hand. So you're working in this one rotational pattern, which you're already accustomed to. Like try grabbing a door with the opposite hand to work on the opposite rotation. Just subtle things in life like that, that can help you improve those imbalances.
Yeah, you're here blowing my mind because I'm here like, man, should I just start like consciously walking with my left foot forward all the time, right? Should I like try to start doing that and like do the little things in life to try to build the strength on my left side? So it's interesting. That's I find that quite fascinating. That's nuts.
to that, I would say if changing the way you walk leads to other problems and leads to inefficient performance, I would not recommend that you change the way you walk necessarily. I think there are other entry points that might be more useful.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, this is now being specific to me for a second, but like, is it like, you know, getting one of those like booty bands that I see the folks on Instagram do and just like, you know, do some like hip rotations or.
Well, that would help if your glutes were and the glutes are given most of the credit for being the source of why people have lower extremity injuries and back injuries and arguably shoulder injuries, but it may not necessarily be that. And doing something with a booty band, I mean, you're going to have nice looking. But I would say the other word, I'm not sure how profane I can be on here because I like being profane.
You can be as profane as you want.
You're going to have a nice ass if you do booty band. That is going to work your ass. But is it going to translate to when your foot touches the ground? Is it's going to help bring attention to the glutes, but is it functional strengthening? Is it fun?
Absolutely.
So it might be more we tweak your movements in what we call closed chain when your foot is on the ground, and that might have more transfer to improving your movement pattern.
Okay. Absolutely, man. That's good to keep in mind. On your website, you wrote a powerlifting 101 guide, which I actually found particularly interesting. In that guide, you talked about the importance of goal setting. And this is actually something I think about and talk about a lot with people, and the idea of, you know, the quote unquote SMART goals. And part of that is sort of the realistic bit. When you're working with stuff like pain, when you're working with recovery and getting stronger, how can people start thinking about what's an actual realistic, goal? Particularly for a lot of us with egos out there, right? Because I think a lot of people tend to lift with their ego and try to go for as high of a number as possible and might not do things in the smartest way.
Yeah, so I'm going to break this down into two components. And sorry, there's a fire truck outside of my apartment.
You're good.
Welcome to New York, if for all you listeners who have not lived here or been here. So when I talk about pain, I usually try to steer people away from creating pain goals and thinking about function. Like, what is the pain that you're experiencing limiting you from doing? Is it competing in a competition? Or is it something as simple as, like, I want to get on the floor and play with my kids? You have to find what is valuable to an individual and stay focused on that, because that is what's going to drive you. But there are certain things that are realistic, like I'm going to outsprint my high school teenage son that's like the captain of the track team. And it's like there are certain realistic goals, and that might not be one of them, especially if you consider our genetic potential is huge. So a lot of performance is limited by our genetic ceiling. There's no secret that most of the professional athletes that are out there didn't just get there because of hard work. They certainly put in the hard work, but their potential, they started with a higher ceiling than someone like you or I did, which I'm hoping to change next generation, because I'm a little bit more of a genetic beast than my parents. Parents, you were great raising us, but genetically, I think we're going to carry on the torch a little bit more. So, for example, in powerlifting, I might have a client that's like, I want to compete someday. And that's cool. But what are you looking to get out of competition? Do you want to be the best at nationals or place in world someday? Okay, let's see how long it's going to take you to get there. Like, let's start with a local competition and let's see who in your weight class right now is actually crushing it, and thinking about like, what does their training look like? Is this person just like a genetic freak that you will never catch no matter how hard you try? And it might require having a conversation with the athlete to be like, listen, you can put up some serious numbers. It's going to take some time. You're going to have some really crappy sessions in the gym, and you're going to get pretty damn close. But this person is an anomaly, and you should not be shooting for that. Or maybe you talk about changing the weight class up a little bit. But it's a little bit nuanced. But at the end of the day, you have to stay in your lane and be like, I'm going to go out there and put up consistent numbers. I'm going to put on like an extra 2.5 kilograms in my deadlift per month. Because if you multiply that by 12, let's do the math. So 25 kilograms, that's like 60 pounds a year on any lift, which is pretty damn good. I think any competing powerlifter would love to have that.
Mm. Yeah, man. There's a lot of really great stuff there. I think what's interesting thinking about that from a competitive standpoint, because I've never been a competitor, probably have zero desire to be competitive. So I always try to think about things from the what I call the everyday athlete's perspective. It's Joe Schmo, who at the end of his corporate job goes to the gym and, you know, tries to become as strong as he possibly can, right? So like if you're Joe, how do you think about goal setting in that perspective, right? Because like there's nothing that you're theoretically aiming for, right? Because you're not aiming for competition, but your only goal in your head is, I just want to get stronger, right? Like, what is a realistic pace that Joe can take?
Yeah, and I think that is dictated more by how Joe recovers from training than by looking at whether they want to compete. So trying to find there's no such thing as an optimal exercise program. Like, everyone's so different. Everyone needs a different amount of stimulus. Everyone gets a different amount of sleep. Everyone has different calorie goals, and so on and so forth. So to program for an individual takes a lot of trial and error to get it right. Yeah. And for someone like Joe, especially if Joe's just starting out, he's going to be in Gainesville for a very long time. That line is going to consistently go up and up and up, and he's getting stronger every day until it peaks. And then it's like, okay, Joe, we got to play around with your program a little bit, play around with the program. He gets a little bit stronger, but still not there. All right, Joe, you know, you might need to play around with what you're eating a little bit, maybe add a little bit more protein in there, maybe take some carbs right before you lift to give you that extra boost that you need. Joe, are you sleeping 7 to 8 hours a night? If you're not, let's talk about that. So the goals will be usually strength focused, either strength and or they might start seeing their waistline slim down and they like how it makes them feel, seeing some definition. Or being able to do something in your house that used to be heavy, like lifting a pot out of a cabinet. Now there's like, holy shit, this feels like a feather. Like those types of things that I can focus on, and goals can always change. And I think giving people the ability to be like, all right, like I hit this one, let's hit this one. Okay, I didn't get here yet, so maybe I'll hit it in 6 more weeks. And right now I'll focus on something that's like within reach.
Yeah, absolutely. And this kind of ties back a little bit to our slightly earlier talking points, but I'm here thinking about the other sort of functional things that happen in people's lives and the other functional training that people do, right? Like there's a lot of folks out there who just do like HIIT style classes, right? Who are just doing kettlebell training, they're maybe doing box jumps, you know, maybe they're doing at this point because of COVID something at the park. How do you change your thinking around building strength when you might not necessarily be working with weights in particular? And this is particularly important right now in this moment because not a lot of us have access to weights. Maybe some of us in some parts of the country at this point. But, you know, I just have my couple rubber bands that I store under my bed. And I think a lot of people are like that.
Yeah. So it goes back to what your goals are with fitness. If building strength right now is your goal, you will likely have to do very, very high repetitions with things that are at a low intensity. So you might be doing a booty band for 30 repetitions versus going to a gym and doing a deadlift for 5. In order to get, it's obviously not going to be the same result. You just want to challenge the body till it gets to a point of fatigue so that you can actually cause some deformation of your muscle fiber so that they have to heal. But does that mean you're going to have better quality lifts in the gym? No, but you're decreasing the overall strength loss right now. And I think that's the best you can do, along with working on any other performance flaws you might have in your lifts, like maybe on your bench you're weak getting the bar off your chest. All right, so let's play around with different variations of a push-up. And I can make, and not just me, like anybody who does exercise can make exercises way more difficult by adding tempo, adding repetitions, adding, you know, different range of motion requirements. Like if I take that push-up and I'm like, okay, put your feet on a bench, it's going to be harder. If I tell you, okay, spread your hands apart a little bit more, it's going to be harder. So I can get that intensity higher without changing the exercise and just changing variables of the exercise. So I have fun doing this type of stuff. And it's not, all hope is not lost for building strength. It just requires a little bit of creativity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that that's a really great way to work through that like potential ceiling that you might be hitting right now. Because like, man, I'll tell you, there's only so many push-ups I can do without getting bored. And after a certain point, you just have to find the little things that make it slightly more difficult for you. And you have to find the little things that make it a little bit more challenging. And like you said, to a certain degree, it's like, all right, like, what is going to hold me down until I can get, you know, a pair of dumbbells again in my hands? What's going to actually hold me down for the next couple of weeks, months, years, yeah. You know, until things are back to normal.
Yeah. So call to action to everybody listening. If you're having trouble, like Rich is, finding value in doing push-ups, you can hire a coach like myself to manipulate that for you. Because I have my clients doing decline push-ups, doing tempo push-ups, doing pause push-ups, doing oblique push-ups where you're like turned on the side, because, you know, in my training, I also do capoeira on top of powerlifting. So we're always in these really contorted positions where chest strength has to be maintained in like the most awkward position where it's not incredibly functional, but in order to do cool stuff, you have to train it.
Yeah, you brought me to my next topic. How did you get into to capoeira? Because, you know, like you mentioned, you know, beforehand, you are Puerto Rican and Italian. I didn't ever see a lot of capoeira growing up myself. So how did you discover it, get into it? Because I've seen some of the stuff you've done on Instagram and it looks pretty cool. And I think that like the idea of this like fighting style dance thing is pretty dope. But how'd you get into it?
So this was my second go around. The first time I got introduced to capoeira was when I was an undergrad, but here's my Puerto Rican side showing. I was teaching salsa classes at my university at the time, and it met
Nice.
at the same time as the capoeira class, so I couldn't do capoeira and teach salsa. And I loved salsa, but right now my passion is capoeira. I was in the park, in Central Park. I say the park is like everyone knows that I'm talking about Central Park, but it's like the park. I
The
was in
park.
the park reading, which I had just started reading more at the time, so me being in the park was just weird, but and while reading. So then I see a bunch of people doing these cool flips, like no lie, like five consecutive back flips. And then I saw what
Wow.
we call the joda, which is it's a circle in capoeira where everyone stands around, claps, and takes turns dancing and fighting, if you will. I was like,
Yeah.
that's capoeira. And I don't necessarily believe that things happen for a reason necessarily, but like this is a sign that like, okay, this is really cool. I really am looking for, and at the time I was looking for like co another community, because like I have my friends, I'm cool with my friends, and like work was going well. It's like I want something else to challenge me. I want to meet some new people.
Yeah.
So I just brought I found the courage to sign up for capoeira. And the first class I was incredibly nervous, but my community, shout out Abadá Capoeira NYC, my community is incredible. They like three of the higher chords immediately reached out to me and were like, okay, this is how you do the Jenga, and the Jenga is our basic movement, and like this is what you need to focus on. And I was hooked after, and it becomes part of, it's more than just a fight and a dance. And that's what I think took me back the most, is that like I'm here practicing songs in Portuguese. They're prepping me to start learning how to play instruments. So it's like on top of all the splashy stuff that you see, it's a culture, it's an art, and I really feel all of that. And it's way more than I ever thought it would be, but I'm really glad that I'm on this journey.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. And I have to say that I feel like that's what a lot of people who get into some of the more I'll say traditional arts and especially combat sports, I feel like they really start to learn is that there's this like very much culture and cultural enrichment that comes a part of that education because it's all connected, right? It's the music, it's the chanting, it's the sounds, it's the energy that is fueling the movement, that's fueling everything that is sort of surrounded in that. And I also think what's actually particularly interesting about what you're saying about how you're mixing it into your training is that I relate that a lot into how I got into boxing and how I got into boxing training because I was looking for something that can help me generate explosive energy and explosive strength and to do cardio in a way that's not cardio.
I feel that.
And so I went to boxing for that, and I was like, okay, one, here I'm learning to jump rope, but two, I'm learning to throw punches into a heavy bag that are supposed to still be heavy punches when you are tired and exhausted and your heart rate is, through the roof. So I have a particular fascination with that and the way that you're blending that into your style because of that.
I think one of the hardest things about COVID is obviously all the gyms closed, and my community was forced into a virtual world where that aspect of community was lost a little bit behind a screen. And but now it's slowly coming back. We're training outdoors, and I feel it again because there's so much value in play. There's so much value in nonverbal communication. Like if you're sparring, someone's not gonna be like, I'm gonna punch you with my left hand. It's like that they're not gonna tell you that. You have to learn how to react. So you start making all these connections, and what I like about play is that you're moving your body in unconventional ways. So if you give your body options to move, like it translates to life so well. Like if you're walking on the subway and some like weird dude pulls up to you, like you're gonna have all these reactive tendencies. They'll be like, fuck off, man. Like I find myself turning corners now and just like sticking my hand out like I'm gonna go fight someone in capoeira. Just because it's like it's
Interesting.
programmed now, because I just get used to feeding off other people's energy, reacting. Sometimes it's unwarranted, but it's just a product of
Note to self.
So
Note to self, don't turn a corner when Jordan is coming around because you don't know what's going to happen. I have to ask you, like, at this point, both in your career and in your personal goals, like, what do you look forward to, right? Like, what is the thing that you are aiming for now?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's to continue to help more clients reach their performance and wellness goals. It's to continuously enrich myself to be a better person. I'm always on this. I believe that there's a connection to self that's incredibly important and more important than your connection to others. So I'm always on this journey that I don't think is ever going to end, where I'm always trying to, like, right now I'm reading a book on digestion. It was like, you want to talk about being abstract? It's like, I know about diet, now, not as much as Tiffany, right. Shout out Tiffany, not as much as Tiffany, but certainly I know some things. But now it's like, how is that food digested? How is it going to improve my quality of life? And how could it possibly improve someone else's? I read a book on, like, love and relationships because I was in one, and I was like, I want to understand a little bit more about, like, kind of what it's supposed to be like. So I come across these things in life that make me seek more information. It's like, on top of that, like, I have a French lesson after this. And because, wow. Like, I've always been fascinated with the language, and I hate sucking at things. So I was like, now it's something else to keep me driven. So it's like, not only am I applying time into my business and my exercise, but it's personal enrichment. And I set these goals where it's like, I don't expect to speak French fluently by the end of the month or even the end of the year. And it's going to be something right. that's a process, and watching Netflix shows with French subtitles and shit I don't understand, but allowing myself to be uncomfortable along the journey. But I feel like, and I sound a little bit conceited when I say this, you should ask all the girls I've been on dates with about, like, maybe, like, this overzealous energy of, like, I am on this journey that never ends. I got a business, I got it all together. But it's like, ultimately, I'm always looking to improve myself, because if I improve myself, my clients are going to get a better version of me. They're going to have better qualities of life. And, you know, I think that's what life is all about.
I'm here wondering what that Tinder profile looks like.
For your information, all the profiles do not exist in my life right now. Fair enough. That's for the dating podcast when we talk about my dating life. But for now, let's look at the topic.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, look, man, this has been absolutely awesome. You have, like, schooled me on so many, like, really interesting stuff. I think, like you, and I think that people who start things for themselves, whether it be a creative venture or a business, there's often this, like, cool, like, commonality and almost, like, fraternal spirit, in that, like, you find this thing that you're particularly interested in, and you kind of just try to find the most about it. And I think that is the journey that I'm on, right? Both from getting people's perspective in their professions, but also, you know, just hearing about people's perspectives on life. And I think that is so important. And, you know, we've only spoken a handful of times, but I feel very connected to you, because I'm like, man, like, he's entrepreneurial just like me. We're both going after it, and we're both crushing it in our own ways. Again, I'm now being the conceited one. but thank you so much, man. I really appreciate for you coming on and for you talking a bit about your worldly perspective on this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I just aside from my business ventures, I'm on a mission to help combat this problem that we have in the world of just overall poor health and physical activity, where people have been misled, or maybe they don't have the desire, and there's a bunch of other factors that go into why people don't take care of themselves. And one of my goals is to get the world more, you know, informed, so that they can make better choices about them, you know, about their health. But I'm tired of people dying of things like diabetes and hypertension and having strokes. And, well, sometimes that's not preventable, but there's a lot of diseases that can be prevented that will, you know, improve some. I would much rather have a musculoskeletal strain from doing strength training than to have diabetes, 100%. So if I can get more people to feel that way, then I feel like I'm doing my job.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. Well, if people want to work with you, talk to you, chat with you, go on a date with you, where can they reach out?
Well, if you really want to go on a date with me, then I'll have to reactivate my profile. No, I'm just kidding. So I'm all over Instagram. I'm the abstract at the abstract physio on Instagram. I DM. It does go down in the DM. So if you do want to date me, that is one good option. But I do, and I do engage with all my followers. So definitely DM me anytime. My website is www.theabstractphysio.com. I also have a Facebook page associated with my business account. If you also search my name on Google, you're going to see my salsa dance videos from when I was like in college, along with other stuff that probably I'm embarrassed to admit, but you pick your poison if you decide to look me up on Google.
All right, man, that's awesome. You know, before you slide into his DMs, make sure to go look up the salsa videos just so you see how skilled he is. Well, thank you so much, Jordan. I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on, brother. You're welcome back anytime you want to come back. And you know, I hope you have a good one,
man. Appreciate the opportunity. Baby James.
Let's get it.
Hey, yo, Icon, what you got?
I'm back in rare form, nigga. I said I'm back in rare form, nigga. Yo, listen, I said I came from the bottom. You an elevator, baby. The struggle made us humble and genuinely crazy. Yo, silver spoon, never. I was raised in the living room. All day smoking haze, praying that I get it soon. I took a nigga pack when I was broke. Almost 20 with no money, up in college lacking hope. Had the whole dorm clicking. You know niggas gotta smoke. Wiping out the competition. Ain't no David had the dope. Couldn't walk in my butters. They only G's. Nigga, my wrist freeze. Niggas play Superman and get Chris Reeve. All from a text message. I have your girl on you. You'll be stretched out before you send your next message. I don't like niggas. Beat around the bush for what? I'm really nice, nigga. Ask around and look them up. I'm in a deli with a bottle trying to see what's goody. Yeti side, streets cold. You gon' need your
okay, money. None of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, he lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga. I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby. I don't need a bride. I said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, he lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga. I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby. I don't need a bride.
I feel like a precious pebble lodged under the sea. Since I was 8, I knew a 9-to-5 wasn't for me. Shit ain't always how you want it to be. That's why I gotta work hard. My ancestors had to run to be free. At 15, I was running the streets, drinking liquor, puffing the gweets, cutting from school, fucking with freaks. By 21, I was sunk in the seat. G-Ride, bumping some beats, probably looking for something to eat. During my childhood, nothing was sweet. I wore ponies to school. The mother niggas had ups on their feet. It never fazed me though. I knew I was more intelligent, and the gift I had made it even more relevant. When I rap, I touch many like a known therapist, cause I'm packed with more passion than a gold medalist. I say something, they gon' jack it, nigga, no letterman. I can pop at any time, shit, there's no telling it.
Okay, none of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, they lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. I said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, they lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride.